fans, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets, powered by FCN, presented by Game Plus Network. Chris Meany here with you. Thanks, as always, for taking the time to hang out. Today on the show, we have Chelsea Messenger. She's the host of The Daily Tip. You can catch that on Odyssey. It is sponsored by BetMGM. We are going to get into the Final Four, which is happening this Saturday. It's UNC and Duke, the first meeting ever in the March Madness tournament between these two teams. Just the second time ever that both squads are in the Final Four together. Unbelievable. Duke is favored by 4.5. We have a massive total at 151. The other game is Kansas and Nova. The Jayhawks also favored by 4.5, and the total much lower at 132. It should be an entertaining weekend. The only one seed left is Kansas. In my opinion, Duke has been the most impressive team in this tournament, the only team to score at least 75 points in every single game. They've had at least five guys with double-digit scoring performances. We'll slow that down and get it right for you in every single game as well. I mean, they're shooting the lights out, 50% from the floor, 35% from beyond the arc, and 75% from the free throw line. Pretty impressive stuff from Duke. UNC had their number. They went in to Duke and won that game on March 5th. So this is a bit of a rematch. Things obviously have changed since then. A couple of little coaching changes from Coach K himself. We'll break that game down with Chelsea, and also the Jayhawks won, the only number one seed left as well. And UNC, an 8 seed, but not really playing like an 8 seed. They have been very, very impressive, especially cleaning up on the glass, right? I mean, they really do a great job of rebounding. So both games, I think, should really be phenomenal. Jay Wright, two-time winner here. I think Nova's the most experienced squad. I think we can agree on that, of the four remaining teams. I do feel like they have the most experience, but, a big injury, of course, right? I mean, Justin Moore, an awful injury. You never want to see this from any of the kids, but he tore his Achilles in the last game, and they'll have to adjust without Justin Moore. But the best free throw shooting team in the country, 83% from the line, 15 for 15 to ice that game against Houston to get to the Final Four. So a lot to talk about on this show. Chelsea also has some MLB futures, and Tina will drop by, and we'll continue our MLB future talk as well. She's got quite a few, actually. We will dive into the NL East. We'll talk a little bit about the AL East. She's got some overs and some unders for some win totals, as well as just who she thinks will win certain divisions in Major League Baseball. As tomorrow will be a week away from opening day in MLB. We have a few videos in case you're just joining here in Mean Streets for the first time in a while. This is only the second episode in about a week. Still kind of recovering from the COVID. I feel worse today than I did yesterday. So I don't know. I thought it was progressing, but here we are. It's all good. But if you're looking for other MLB future content, Tino and I have been clipping some videos, some division previews. Yesterday, we really dove into the AL West. You can catch that over on our FTN YouTube page, as well as some of the other division previews. We're going to turn our attention to the National League as we've previewed the three divisions in the American League. And we'll get into, Cy Young and MVP, and we'll continue some fantasy baseball stuff here. And that's kind of where I'll go to now. But I do want to say, if you are watching on our FTN YouTube page, smash that like button, subscribe, do us a solid. You have any questions, you can leave them there in the comments section or in the YouTube section. I'm seeing some stuff here already of people hanging out. So I absolutely do love that. And also check out Game Plus Network. Always a really good lineup. Pat Mayo Experience is next. All in Football at Eastern tonight with Jake Seeley and Jeff Ratcliffe, the number one ranker in the game. It's not you, Seeley. It's not you, sir. You're number two. And Ratcliffe is number one. What a duo, those two guys, right? Helping you in your fantasy football leagues. We're just, a couple weeks away from draft time, and it's always exciting times in the NFL. But we're going to focus here on baseball, NBA. 6 games on the ice. I get some picks a little bit later on in the show. And Tino, like I said, is going to drop by. 11 games on the hard court, so he has some NBA stuff for us as well. Let's take a look at NFBC Round 2. Yesterday, we led off with Round 1. So these are drafts happening in the month of March. High-stakes leagues, people putting their money on the line. So I thought this was the best way to take a look at the ADP. And some things have changed a little bit. The first pick on average in the second round is Rafael Devers of the Boston Red Sox. You got Mookie Betts here of the Dodgers. Just a couple years ago, he was a top pick. Now he is moved to the second round, much like Mike Trout when we mentioned him yesterday. Luis Robert in there at 15, more on him in a little bit. Ozzie Albies at 16. And we have Freddie Freeman, now a member of the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's going to be really weird for me to just kind of hone in and oh man, it's, I don't like it. But nonetheless, still a lot to offer and a heck of a lineup with Turner, who is the first pick on average off the board, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman, your top three bats in the Dodgers lineup. Jacob DeGrom, we talked about him yesterday, how I have him as number one in my pitcher rankings, able to get him in the mid-second round of a Sports Illustrated draft last week, led by Jennifer Piacenti. He is not the first pitcher off the board here. He is actually number three, but you see the pitcher run here after DeGrom, Walker Buehler, Max Scherzer, who I do believe still has one more solid year left in him from a fantasy baseball perspective. Brandon Woodruff in there as well. So you really go Cole, Burns in round one, DeGrom, Buehler, Scherzer, Woodruff. I would suggest grabbing at least an arm in your first two picks. I mean, it really does drop off after, you know, the top 12 or so, in my opinion. Manny Machado in there at third base, Jordan Alvarez, and then Teoscar Hernandez. For Jordan Alvarez, I think he's like a league winner. I really do. I love where he's going in drafts. I think he's a strong, strong target, has a lot to offer. Clearly nothing to offer from a stolen base standpoint, and it's something to keep in mind with these NFBC leagues. It's a rotisserie league. You know, you don't want to punt stolen bases. You're not going to be able to win. You have to have some stolen bases to win, right? I mean, you don't need to have the most to win, but you can't be in the bottom five. You at least have to be in the middle of the pack. So if you're starting Vlad and Alvarez, you're really going to have to attack the stolen bases. You're going to have to attack saves soon. You're going to be, you know, kind of punting an ace, really, in the first two rounds as well. But I wanted to give some love to Luis Robert. I don't think there's a bad pick here in this range. I like them all, even Teoscar Hernandez. I think he belongs in there as well. But Luis Robert is the guy for me. I've given him a lot of love here on this show over the past couple weeks. I do believe he is a very, very strong target. And I think this time next year, we're going to be talking about Luis Robert as the first-round pick. So, Tino, if you have that Luis Robert board handy, and away we go here. These numbers on the left are projections from our very own Vlad Sedler. His rankings, projections, everybody's rankings, projections, baseball content is available over at ftnfantasy.com. You can use the promo code MEANSTREETS, really help you set up your drafts, which again, we're just a week away from MLB season. But look at some of the numbers that Vlad has for him. 33 bombs, 21 stolen bases, a decent average. Clearly, last year, you see the numbers on the right, pretty solid slash line, not walking a lot, but also something to keep in mind is that he was dealing with some injuries, so he was limited. He didn't play a whole lot last year, but I do believe that this guy is the next best thing in baseball. I think, again, he's going to be a top five pick next year. He's a five-tool player. He's going as outfield number seven. The min pick you see there is number seven overall, and the max is 27. So some people willing to take him in the first round, going to touch a lot of categories. The White Sox are going to be one of the best offensive teams in all of baseball. I think we'll see Robert, for the most part, hit in that two spot. He's got a lot of pop. I think he can get more than 33 home runs. I think he can flirt with 40. And I think over time, we're looking at this guy as like a 40, 45 home run player. Luis Robert is the real deal. You leave your draft with him, I think you're on your way. A great discussion here happening live on our FTN YouTube page. I see some Tiger Woods stuff, and I know Chelsea was talking about Tiger Woods on her show, The Daily Tip, this morning. So maybe we'll touch base on Tiger. He's not playing this weekend, and we're unsure if he is going to play at the Masters next week, but we do know he is there. And of course, that is exciting. Chelsea Messenger is in here next. Keep her locked. Welcome back to Mean Streets here on Game Plus Network. Chris Meany here with you as we bring in Chelsea Messenger. She is the host of The Daily Tip on Odyssey, sponsored by BetMGM. Chelsea, happy Wednesday. Thanks for taking the time. How are you?
Yeah, I've been sitting in the bullpen waiting to come in. So I'm all jacked up on coffee. I've been up since 3:30 a.m. and I am excited to talk all things Final Four, sprinkle some baseball in there. Thank God we finally have some baseball to talk about. And I heard you talking about the Masters. My goodness, it's going to be a great spring.
It really is going to be a great spring. I know the last time that you and I chatted, we were unsure if there was going to be any baseball. I know it was still heavy football. We were talking about the playoffs, but I know that you cover a lot of sports, and I'm thrilled to be able to chat some baseball with you. We'll hold on to that baseball in a little bit. I didn't think I was really going to talk Tiger Woods with you, but I know you brought it up on your show this morning, and I saw you tweet out some odds from BetMGM. You know, what was that discussion like with you and your co-host talking about Tiger Woods? I think it's really exciting, just the thought of him potentially playing. And if he does play in the Masters, will you get involved with any Tiger Woods bets?
Here's the thing about Tiger Woods. Every time you bet on him, it's probably going to be a square bet. But he breaks so many rules because you've seen what he's done in the past. He's already had one incredible comeback. And I get it. The odds are stacked against him again. He's coming back from a broken leg. And we're also looking at a field of competitors that, you know, it's not like they're some shrinking violence either. Like, we're having some great golf being played down the stretch, especially by Scottie Scheffler. But here's the thing about Tiger. He's probably not going to play unless he believes that, number one, he can play four rounds, and number two, that he has a chance to win. So we go back and forth saying, is betting on Tiger Woods a square bet? Because, you know, so many people who don't really watch golf that much or say, oh, Tiger Woods, yeah, let's jump on him. But you've got to remember, at the Masters, experience matters. We see most of the past champions and most of the people who win at Augusta are guys with experience at Augusta National because it's such a difficult course.
Yeah, it really is. And just the thought of him playing and, you know, that the fact that he's thinking about it, I think is remarkable on itself. Like, you mentioned it. I mean, it's not just an average torn ACL. It's the guy had to reconstruct his entire leg, basically. And for the Masters, experience is key for sure. But to walk that course, it's very hilly. It would be very challenging. But I'm rooting for him. I'd love to see him. I'd also maybe, you know, it wouldn't be the end of the world if he just had another year of rehab and he was able to come back maybe this time next year. I do believe we'll see him at, you know, some moment, hopefully. Let's switch gears, though, because I think that conversation was pretty highly entertaining. And when he won the Masters a couple years ago, nobody was considering him at all to win when he just kind of came out of nowhere and he won. I mean, the odds were ludicrous at that time as well. But I believe he is, what, 40-1 to win the Masters? It certainly is a long shot bet. Let's talk March Madness with you. I want to get your thoughts, first of all, before we get into some of the games, on your thoughts on the tournament and who you think has been the most impressive team to date so far.
Most impressive team. It's kind of hard because all Final Four teams are blue blood teams. So not any huge surprises there. I think North Carolina is probably the shocker just because it was a down year by Carolina standards and the way that they entered this tournament with some thunder beating Coach K on his own court. And now, good God, I'm an NC State fan. I went to NC State. I graduated from NC State. So now our two bitter rivals, UNC and Duke, are playing in the Final Four. So can they both lose? I know that's not an option. But looking at that game from a storyline perspective, how often do we see this type of rivalry matchup in this deep of a situation when it comes to the playoffs? The only thing I can equate it to is the Red Sox-Yankees meeting in the ALCS or maybe Alabama-Auburn in the final regular season game of the year when they're both good in college football. But looking at this matchup, the one trend that really stuck out to me is the over. Both of these offenses are firing on all cylinders. Looking at Duke, they're shooting 55% for the entirety of the tournament. And they've scored at least 78 points in 9 of their last 10 games. The over has hit for the Blue Devils in 8 of their last 10. And the over has hit in 5 straight matchups when Carolina and Duke have faced off, including the one this year, 94-81 with the Tar Heels taking that one. So I would lean towards the over. I know it's a high total at 151.5, but I do like some points to be scored here with a slight lean to Carolina. I think 4.5 is too many points in this rivalry matchup.
I think so, too. I'm with you. I think we'll see a lot of points. I've been most impressed with Duke. I see both sides. It's like back and forth, UNC or Duke. I think I've been most impressed with Duke because just of what you said, the fact of what they're shooting from the floor and, you know, 75% from the line and 35% from beyond the arc and the points, right? You said at least 78 and what, 8 of 9. And it's in the only team to have at least 75 in every single game. So I've been really impressed with them. And I think, you know, they'll have some fans here at this game, won't they? I mean, when they went in and played on the road against Duke. They handled them, but now they'll have some backing, right? They'll have maybe 20%, 30% of some fan base there. So I think that kind of goes a long way. And I also think that they're just going to control the glass. So I think UNC wins this game straight up, but I really do like your call on the points. Let's go to the other game here. The only one seed is Kansas. And Chelsea, a lot of this isn't a shot at anyone who joined the show. I agreed with them. A lot of people are saying that Kansas was the worst one seed out of the four, but they had the clearest path. Now, they kind of did. They had some issues. They were trailing Miami at half by six. They ended up beating them by 26. Here they are against Nova, who I do believe is the most experienced team here of the four. How do you see this one shaping out? We also have a team in the Jayhawks that are favored by 4.5.
Yeah, looking at Kansas here, I think they're entering with the most momentum of any team in the Final Four. Looking at that second half against Miami, that was one of the most impressive halves of basketball I think we have seen in the entire tournament, coming out and absolutely wiping the floor with Miami. And that was a close game at halftime. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to roll with Kansas here. And plus, it's been a murderer's row against Big East teams. They took down Creighton, they took down Providence, and what do you know, Villanova in the Big East as well. And I will say Miami used to be in the Big East too. But looking at Villanova, I think it's a problem, Justin Moore being out. Their second leading scorer, he's second on the team in assists, and that's really what propelled Villanova to this point. Not just him, but their guard play. So when you take away that, I think Jay Wright, you've got to factor in the coaching. I think he's the better coach in this matchup. But at some point, that has its limitations. And I think the athletes are better on the Kansas side of the ball. So I'm going to roll with Kansas here.
Yeah, I saw Jay Wright on PTI yesterday. They're talking about just the pace and you know, how fast Kansas plays. And, you know, Nova does a really good job of that, too. And he was just kind of in awe of what Kansas can do, you know, with Remy Martin coming off the bench. And he's got two 20-point showings against, you know, two different teams in this tournament, as just a guy who can come off the bench and give you that. And from the Nova side of things, 83% from the line, the number one team in the nation, 15 for 15 to close out that game against Houston. That goes a lot, too. I think people overlook that, Chelsea, because at the end of the day, these are kids, but you know this, free throws matter so much, and it could be the difference of winning on the spread, losing on a spread, or these guys like not cutting down the nets, you know, in a week and a half's time.
Yeah, we have this discussion on the show because usually when you see a great free throw shooting team, you kind of lean towards them. If you think that Kansas is going to be up at the end, it's not going to be Villanova taking the free throws. It's going to be Kansas. So you kind of need to be in it. Because think about the final minutes of a game. It's desperation mode. And especially when you get to the Final Four, nobody's surrendering in the final 10, 15 seconds of a game. So even if it's close, I think if Kansas is up with 2 minutes left to play, I'm not sure if the free throws matter because Villanova needs to be in the lead.
Yeah, you're right. I think overcoming Justin Moore is going to be, probably what gets in the way for Nova. Addy Slim's checking in here. Free throws make and lose millions. Absolutely. I'll put you on the spot. Who wins it all?
I think it's going to be Duke, the way that they're playing. I think Carolina covers in that game. But, God, we've seen this in sports. All the storylines seem to point towards one direction. Coach K, final season. And plus, they're just playing at an unreal rate. Paolo Banchero certainly looks like the best player in the tournament. And the way they're shooting, like when we see a team get hot like this, and they probably just have the best flat-out players on the court, like the best collection of talent. So I like the way Duke's playing. They had the most hype entering the tournament. And, yeah, I'm going to go with Duke here.
Are they the most hated team in college basketball? Because it just seems like everyone wants to find a reason to pick against Duke all the time.
I think it's interesting because – yeah, everybody does that when there's some sort of greatness. It's the same thing with Tom Brady. People who were not Patriots fans, like, you want to find a reason to hate him. But I will say this about Coach K. It is very impressive the way he has adapted throughout all the changes of college basketball, because when he first started out, he was recruiting guys that were staying 3 or 4 years. But now that's not how college basketball works. It's guys that are one and dones. So he has gone through all of these eras of college basketball. And he's made a Final Four in what, 5 decades, 4 decades, something crazy. So I think that is very impressive, no matter how much you want to hate Coach K.
Yeah, I agree. People just love to hate. That's it. I tweeted out the stat that these two teams are playing each other for the first time ever in the March Madness tournament, which I think is ridiculous in its own right. And somebody just told me to stick to hockey because it couldn't have been true. Stick to hockey. It can't be true. It's like just people are just I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, Chelsea, about people. I'm getting sidetracked here. But some people just don't seem to respect Coach K. And I think it's ridiculous. And what a way to potentially go out for him is to play UNC, arch rivals for the first time in the tournament, potentially beat them, and maybe cut down the nets, I think would be fantastic. Addy Slim, again, a shout out as a Duke fan, says that Addy would be crying if that would be the case. So good luck, Addy Slim, this weekend to Duke, and we'll see if you are in tears at the end of the tournament. Chelsea, hang on one more segment. Let's switch gears and we'll talk a little baseball. I know you play a little baseball yourself, but I want to see who you're feeling to win some of these divisions, if there's any win totals you like as well. So more to come here on Mean Streets. Keep her locked. Welcome back to Mean Streets here on Game Plus Network. Chris Meany with Chelsea Messenger, the co-host of The Daily Tip over at Odyssey, sponsored by BetMGM. Chelsea Messenger right there on the Twitter machine if you want to give her a follow and check out her show daily. Chelsea, I saw you on Twitter a couple weeks ago. Looked like you were getting your arm ready, loosened up for a little softball. I don't know how the weather is around you. Are you... has softball started yet? Are you getting a little antsy? What's happening in your
life? I don't actually play. No? My husband played 11 seasons, and during the off season, when you need a throwing partner, that would be me. Because, you know, when your wife's with you, that's your go-to throwing partner. So I, over the years, have helped my husband keep his arm in shape during the off season. So no, I don't play. I played in high school, but certainly do not play now.
All right. Well, I guess he's ready to go, thanks to you, come baseball season. So tomorrow is 1 week away from opening day, so it's super exciting here. I wanted to talk to you about some MLB futures. We've been previewing some divisions here. One division we've yet to preview is the NL East. So let's start there with the defending World Series champion Atlanta Braves, who are favored at plus 140, the win total at 90.5. The Mets also at 90.5, plus 150. They made a lot of noise in the offseason. They brought in a lot of older players. Max Scherzer, I think he still has something left to offer. Starling Marte, Mark Canna, Eduardo Escobar. They were really busy in the offseason. The Phillies checking in at plus 380, 85.5 the win total here. And we got some long shots with Miami and Washington at 71.5. I'm happy for the Nats that they brought in Nelson Cruz. Maybe they had to get some protection for Juan Soto, but I do believe it's going to be a long season, Chelsea, in Washington. Who do you like to win this division? What stands out to you?
Yeah, from a value standpoint, I think I'm going with the Braves. They're an excellent regular season team. And last year, I think it was the most surprising story that we saw in baseball just because they had so many starters hurt. They had so many injuries to their rotation, and they didn't really have their big name starters entering the World Series. But looking at this year, their top three guys, some of the best in the league, Max Fried, Charlie Morton, and Ian Anderson, more than capable of keeping this team afloat. And plus adding Matt Olson. I know it is a big hole in the lineup from a mentality standpoint, not having Freddie Freeman in there, but Matt Olson's pretty good too. And they have Ozzie Albies, Austin Riley, Marcell Ozuna. So it's still a stacked lineup and a team that I think is still pretty good. And I think at the second best odds, you get a little bit more plus money on them. I would love to take the Mets because on paper, they look like the best team in the division by far. But here's the thing. The Mets are going to Mets. We see it every single season. There is a two-week stretch where something happens, where it's off the field, where it's some kind of clubhouse drama, where their owner is tweeting at somebody, and there's some kind of nonsense. And it derails the team for a little bit. So I just think the Mets are going to Mets. I know that sounds stupid, but I think the way you play that is look at their win total. It is always way too high. Last year, I think it was 91.5 games. They had 77 wins. I'm going to go under again because that number, 90.5, they have not hit this win total since 2006. And that includes the 2015 season where they won the division and made it all the way to the World Series. So no matter how stacked this roster looks, I think 9.5, I'm still playing the under just because they can still have a great season and not hit this number.
I agree. Yeah. And you know, producer Tino is sitting there rolling his eyes as a Mets fan, but when you say like the Mets are going to Mets, he's sitting, Rest. He knows it. He just popped it up on the screen. He's sitting there saying, yes, that's right. At some moment, that will happen. And I do agree, I think, from like a roster standpoint, if Scherzer and DeGrom can stay healthy and give them like just, I don't know, over 200, close to 200 innings.
Like we saw it last year.
That's the other thing. They give them no run support.
Gems of games wasted from Jacob DeGrom just because they could not scratch across any runs. This is a team that offensively was terrible last year, scored the fourth fewest runs in baseball last season. So I'm not sure if the lineup, you know, has enough to get things going, because I totally see this happening. Max Scherzer is going to throw a gem of a game and they'll lose 2-1. I totally see that happening.
You're going to be talking about on your show. Tino and I are going to be talking about on my show. The fact that we'll see Scherzer and DeGrom go through like a 6-8 start stretch where they have a 0.89 ERA, but they're got one win because the Mets
and Jacob DeGrom
are not
isn't hitting this year.
Yeah.
Because there's DH now. So Jacob DeGrom is probably not going to be scoring his own runs again.
And that's something that he certainly can do. So you're talking about maybe the Mets being overvalued. And I do agree. You know, I mean, you gave the stats, only the 90 wins. I mean, even that season when they went to the World Series led by Dark Knight, and they weren't a high-powered offensive squad, and they didn't hit that win total. I want to switch gears and talk about maybe the most competitive division in Major League Baseball, sticking in the East, but going over to the American League. You got the Yankees and the Jays. Everybody at Chelsea wants to talk about the Blue Jays, and I get it. They're going to score a lot of runs, plus 185 here to win the division, 92.5 the win total. I think the other New York team is a little overrated as well. This is a team that's always near the top, 90-plus wins. 91.5 seems a little high to me. It just always seems to be the Rays that people want to overlook, but the past 4 years, Chelsea, they have topped their win total over, 100 wins last season. Even in their shortened season, 60 games, they won 40 of those games. Nobody picked them to win that division. They went to the World Series. I think there's value here with Tampa. Do you agree?
Yeah, definitely. This is straight up disrespectful to a team that has won the AL East the last two seasons. What are we doing here? You've got to give the Rays some credit. I get it. Toronto is super stacked on paper. They look like they should probably win the World Series. But strictly from a value perspective, Tampa Bay at plus 300 to win the AL East. Are you kidding me? This team finds 7-foot lefties that throw like, you know, 102 on trees somewhere. And this is the best team, I think, in all of baseball at finding and developing young arms. And when you're talking about a long season, this is not a 60-game sprint. This is a full season. You need a team with pitching depth, a team with a good farm system, a team that can go the depth of the season. So Tampa Bay, one of the best at doing that. It doesn't matter the name on the back of the jersey. And plus, talk about their offense. Everybody thinks of the pitching and the depth when you think of the Rays, but they scored the second most runs in baseball last year. So put some respect on their offense as well.
And Vegas doesn't want to do that. They don't want to. Even when we start talking about baseball in mid-June, mid-July, this is a team that sometimes when I'm just guessing, but it's obviously going to be about the pitching matchup, Chelsea. But when the Yankees go in there, or when Toronto goes in there, or even the Red Sox, they could be home dogs. I've seen them multiple times be home dogs and still find a way to win. Another division that we haven't previewed yet on this show is the NL Central division. So we do have a board here with some of the odds, and Milwaukee is favored here, and the total is 88.5. St. Louis checks in second at plus 210. I really think it's kind of cool to see Albert Pujols go back and one true last dance, Chelsea. I know the last dance in Green Bay with Rodgers and Adams, that was ludicrous, but with Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina and Albert Pujols, one more go together as a trio in St. Louis is pretty cool. Some big time long shots in this division. Do you feel like this is Milwaukee's division to lose though?
I think so. And especially we talk about pitching depth. I think Milwaukee has top to bottom, probably one of the best staffs in all of baseball. Looking at all three of their top line starters, Brandon Woodruff, Corbin Burns led the league in ERA last season, and Freddie Peralta strikes out a ton of guys. I think the hot stretch we saw from St. Louis at the final weeks of the season, I think a lot of people are going to see that and say, hey, maybe the Cardinals give Milwaukee a run for their money. But looking at some of those games, I don't think those are repeatable results, because they were getting great starts from the old guys, John Lester and J.A. Happ. John Lester's retired. I'm not even sure if J.A. Happ's on the team anymore either, but they were getting great starts from guys who I just you know, they were older. It was not a repeatable result. And Adam Wainwright, I want to believe that he has another great season, but he's over 40 now. Yeah. So it's just, I think it's not repeatable for the Cardinals. I think top to bottom, the Brewers have the much better staff. They do need to find a way to score some runs. I will say that. But their closing staff, also one of the best in the big leagues, Josh Hader, converting on 34 of 35 saves last year. My goodness. And if Devin Williams doesn't punch a wall this year, I think they have this division on lock.
Yeah, keep it cool, Williams, right? I agree there for sure. He kind of screwed them last year with that punch. I love the rotation with Burns. And then you mentioned Woodruff in there and Peralta, who just kind of found his game last year. Is one of the best strikeout pitchers in all of baseball. It's a great 1-2-3. The bullpen is great. The defense is phenomenal, too. That's the offense, of course. But when you got pitching like that, it can keep you in most ball games. And you have the defense behind those pitchers, it can keep you in most ball games. I love the addition of Hunter Renfro, too. I thought he did a lot of great things with the Red Sox last year. He's got some pop in his bat. So maybe a few more runs that way as well. Chelsea, you're fantastic. We have a board here with some other picks that you liked. So maybe on the way out, nobody loves an under, but we gave this one on the show yesterday. So I would love to hear your thoughts. I think I know them, but just in case anybody missed the show yesterday, why are you in on the A's under 69.5 wins? Is it because they traded everybody?
Yeah, nobody has committed to not being competitive like the A's. Like, it's almost embarrassing. They spent $0 in free agency and they traded away their three best players, Matt Chapman, Matt Olson, Mark Canna, three of their top four hitters when it comes to run production. Those three combined for 83 home runs and 244 runs batted in. 35% of the entire team's run production. Chris Bassett also gone. And there's also some rumblings that they still might trade Sean Manaea or Frankie Montas or both. So when you see this, teams committed to not winning, think about it. Midseason, if they're not winning games and they're playing in a tough division, they're even going to trade even more players away. So I think they're committed to, you know, this season being a bust. I will take the under on the A's win total.
Totally in agreement. And I do believe they will trade one of those pitchers, if not both, maybe Sean Manaea. I know his name has been out there in certain rumors. Plus, the division is a little bit more competitive than the other teams, right? You feel like the Angels, if they can stay healthy and Trout is hanging around and Rendon is hanging around, Syndergaard can give them something. Seattle's on the rise. Texas spent all that money as well. So I'm totally in agreement on the under when it comes to Oakland. I know not a lot of people like unders, Chelsea. You have to wait a long time to get that money, but I do believe we will see the Oakland A's as one of the worst teams in all of baseball. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me. Good luck with your MLB futures. Why don't you take the minute to tell people where they can check you out?
Yeah, I am on the Daily Tip each and every weekday. It is 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. If you follow me on Twitter, I tweet out the links if you want to watch it. Also, some links to the podcast. Just search the Daily Tip wherever you get your podcast. It's usually the first thing that pops up. If you want to follow me on Twitter, at Chelsea Messenger is my, it's not screen name, handle. Thinking instant messenger. But yeah, thanks for having me on the show. Great to talk baseball. I am very excited that baseball is back.
Hopefully we can do this again. Yeah, instant messenger. It's that's a way back, playback. Yeah, I love it. We'll get you out of here on that. Thanks, Chelsea, and we'll talk to you soon. Tino's in here next. We're going to continue the MLB talk. We get some NBA and some NHL picks as well. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Mean Streets here on Game Plus Network. Tino Rodriguez underscore on the Twitter machine, rocking the Mets hat. I want to talk some NBA with you. I also want to get into the division, but I want to leave more time. So maybe we just break down the NL East tomorrow. Just maybe a larger breakdown. We got three segments here, about 4 minutes each. So not too much time to really get into it. But I do want to get your thoughts. I mean, clearly you were sitting back and you probably didn't agree with a lot of the Mets stuff, but at the same time, you probably did agree with some of it.
I cannot defend a take that starts with the Mets will Met. That is very true, and I have told you about that, and people have nagged on the Mets for signing these people, just assuming the worst and just that they'll get injured, and maybe they will, but I'll tell you what right now. You can't read into spring training very much. The guys look good. Marte's been back on the field for a week, and he's going first to third, stealing bases, doubles for days. The base running's already taken into effect. We got professional hitters at the plate. Sac flies, something you'd never see with the Mets. playing small ball. And I want to just note the reason, and I'll dig more deep into this, but you mentioned 2006. And the biggest thing from now until 2006 is that the Mets have a competent manager. And I do love Terry Collins, but he had his ups and downs. They have Buck Showalter. And I know we want to talk about the big free agents that they signed, but it matters. The Mets haven't had a quality manager in a while. And I think those one-run losses a lot of people harp on and managing the bullpen and their lineup will attribute to a lot of the manager issues that they've had. And with Buck at the helm now, I think it changes things. Buck Showalter is a respected manager, three-time manager of the year, over three decades already. He's going to go on his fourth. So I think that's the biggest difference, if you ask me, on, you know, other than the players with this team to last.
I agree 100%, and it does matter. It definitely matters, and Buck is a respected general manager or manager, and he's going to be able to, I think, bring them to another level. I think there's value in the Phillies. Again, we'll get into this tomorrow. I think there's value in the Phillies, even though I don't like their pitching. You know I'm a sucker for the Braves. I've known you for a couple years. I have bet the Braves each of the last 5 years. Finally got the Braves right last year with the World Series, but I've been a sucker for them. Another guy that Chelsea didn't and I didn't mention is Mike Soroka, Canadian pitcher who didn't pitch at all last year, who I think is a really good pitcher as well. Could be the four or the five for that team. Adds another element as
I also think the Braves,
Freddie Freeman.
We'll talk about NBA. I know we got to because we said we wouldn't talk baseball, but I love the bullpen. I think the Braves have the best bullpen in the division, and it's not really even close. Kenley Jansen, of course, but you bring in some guys with Matzik last year. You still got Kirby Yates. Will Smith all of a sudden is falling down from, you know, the promised land.
It's still a good arm.
It's insane. It's insane. Yeah. And I think their bullpen, if their starting pitching staff continues to be hurt, struggle. And I do like Ian Anderson a lot, especially in fantasy formats, for how late you can get him. I love their bullpen. And look, the Mets can't beat the Braves. It doesn't matter how good or bad they are. So I'm not oblivious to that. It's just, it's hard to ignore, you know, the things that have happened this offseason. And in regards to the Phillies, they need to figure out Aaron Nola before they can win anything. That guy's starting to open the Phillies.
Well,
Aaron Nola is their biggest issue.
And the defense is going to have – they're going to score some runs. The pitching is not great and the defense is bad. But it is a really strong division. We'll get into that tomorrow with you. And we also are going to do a best ball draft on Friday. That should be fun. Okay, NBA, 11 games. Where do you even start?
So we're going to try to bet good teams today. And so I've noticed this thing where whatever game I start with is the game that loses and then the other twos are winners. So I'm hoping that's not the case today. But if it is, I'm going to go with a selfish pick. The Charlotte Hornets are playing the New York Knicks. The New York Knicks have been one of the hottest teams in basketball. The Hornets need to win this game. Similar to the Nets yesterday, they ended up pulling it out. They didn't cover for us. That's the team we started. So that was a losing pick, but an outright winner. Charlotte Hornets got to win. They lost to the Denver Nuggets. They are toeing the line with the Brooklyn Nets right now. And if Cleveland continues to lose, the 7 and 8 seed both might be up for grabs to manipulate, similar to the top of the East right now. Long story short, Charlotte's got to win this game. It's a 3-point spread. I'm taking them on the money line here just because the Knicks have played very close games as of late. 5-point win against Chicago, 2-point win against Detroit, 8-point win against Miami in Miami, and they beat Charlotte most recently out. But I don't buy that. I know the Knicks are playing well. Julius Randle apparently is about to force himself out of New York. Good. Yep. Go ahead. I mean, it's probably going to make it much better. But the Hornets have won the first two meetings with these against the Knicks, including one in Madison Square Garden. I just think the Hornets got to win this game. And so I'll take them at that low spread if you want, but I'll take a money line to play it safe. We'll go from that to the Memphis Grizzlies, who actually are, even though I said the Knicks were the hottest teams in basketball, the Grizzlies are. I think they've won 9 of the last 10, including 5 in a row, against really, really good teams, including wins against Golden State, Milwaukee, and Brooklyn. No joke. And they've blown them out in all those games, plus no Ja Morant in any of them. Pretty insane. But all of a sudden, they're going against the San Antonio Spurs here on the road, which I could see this as a trap game, but I'm not buying into it because the San Antonio Spurs are now in the playoffs, Meanie. The Los Angeles Lakers have officially weeded themselves out of the playoff picture, and in come the San Antonio Spurs. Weird world to live in. And I think the Spurs, again, these games matter. So I think they got to play to win here. So this is why I could see it as a trap. But again, Grizzlies, hottest team in basketball, good away team. They're just rolling. Josh should be back in the lineup. 5.5 point spread's a little low for me. And they've handled the Spurs and covered that line in each of the first three matchups. They won all three and covered what this line is right now in all three of them. The closest game being an 8-point win in San Antonio. I like the number. I would lay the number. And I think the Grizzlies stay hot. And then we'll end with the Golden State Warriors at home against the Phoenix Suns. I don't want to take all away teams, and it was hard for me to come to on what team to take at home. And I'm going to take +4.5 for the Golden State Warriors at home. They've actually played the Suns very well this season, winning each of the last two matchups. The Suns won the first one, but the Warriors at the start of the season are very different to what they are now. 29-9 at home. They are struggling. The Warriors are struggling. Turmoil. Steve Kerr getting thrown out of games. Ugly losses left and right. Losing to bad teams and the Wizards in Atlanta. But I just think they snap out of it a little bit here. I don't know if they win outright. I think Steph shows up big today, and I think they at least cover this number. So I'll take some good teams today to lay the points, and we'll also take the Hornets just to win outright against the Knicks.
I like the Warriors call, right? I mean, you see the Suns in the schedule. You know, it's you can flip; they can flip that switch. But it is pretty impressive what Phoenix is doing again this season. I mean, 61-14, 31-8. At home, 30-6 on the road. They've won 8 straight. It is extremely, extremely impressive. The Lakers haven't won back-to-back games in over 2 months, dude. It's wild.
I got to just shout out to, I know we go off tangent with it, but our buddy Brandon Gildon's in the house, and I just need him to know.
Gildon, what's up?
Gildon, I know you just got a job, but I need you to focus on Jacob DeGrom starts from here on out, because he did not pitch 9 months ago. He pitched 2 days ago, but it's okay.
He pitched really well.
It's okay. I'm not going to hold you to it. I needed to make there's Mets jokes going on in the chat, and I just needed to jab back for a second there. So we're good. That's all.
Yeah. Again, I think it was one of the biggest steals, and it's not because I had it. It's the sixth pitcher off the board in a fantasy baseball draft mid second round. He pitched the day before that. I think, what did he have? 4K through 2 innings or something like that?
And yeah, he
looked
striking
really,
out,
really strong. He looked
he's
good.
We got a ball to have him. Also, one last take, Alex. I do like Dallas as well today.
I was going to wrap up with that too as the homer pick against the Cavs. I mean, they're just playing really good basketball. I know we've joked about the Mavs. They only beat good teams, but the defense is legit. The defense is really, really strong. And I got to take the L on that Dinwiddie trade, man. I just didn't get it. I didn't like Kristaps there. I didn't think he fit in all that well, but I just didn't understand that deal. But Dinwiddie has looked pretty good as a member of the Mavs. I looked to see what his 3-point prop is. I had it last night at 1.5. It's not yet on the board, but I'll tell you what, if it's 1.5 again, I'll be taking the over. We got some NHL picks here to wrap up Mean Streets. We got some goal scores and some shot props. We'll look to bounce back from the shot props that did not work out for us yesterday. Mean Streets continuing here on Game Plus Network. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back in here to Mean Streets Live on Game Plus Network. I got a few shot props for you. 6 games on the ice. Yesterday, the shot props weren't good. The goal scorers were pretty good. The sides, I thought, were fantastic, besides the Flames losing that tight matchup against Colorado. I mean, I thought that Flames dominated that game, but a really nice, strong showing again from Darcy Kemper. But let's try to bounce back here with some shot props. A lot of these guys, actually all of them, are plus money besides Ehlers, and Petrangelo is minus 110. So for Nikolaj Ehlers at over 3.5 shots, he had 8 shots in his last game. He's cleared in 3 of his past 4. Ever since he's been back in the lineup, he has been unbelievable, really. More on him in the next segment. Spoiler alert, I like him to score. But I do like him to have 4 shots here today. Zach Hyman, you know, there was a couple games in a row where he was bad to us, but overall he's been really, really good to us. He has cleared 2.5 shots in 11 of his last 16 games. He's plus 100 here to have 3 shots on goal. I do like this matchup against the Kings. I just like the fact that he's back on that top power play. He parks his butt right in front of the net. DJ Betts, like, Bet Hyman, dude. I don't know what it is. You just don't like Hyman. I know that's like an inside thing with you, but like Hyman is he's a volume shooter. He's not afraid to shoot the puck. I like where he's parked right in front of the power play. Deflections, rebounds, right? And then you see Drysdale there as the bonus. This is plus money as well. Drysdale, his last 3 games, 6 shots, 5 shots, 4 shots. He's had at least 4 shots in 5 of his past 7. When the Oilers get a couple power plays, this is great news for Drysdale, and it's great news for Zach Hyman, because we know Connor McDavid, yeah, there's been some games lately where he's shooting the puck and he's starting to find the back of the net, but he is looking to pass. He's looking for that cross pass over to Leon Draisaitl, who's on a heck of a run right now, and he's looking at Hyman in front of the net. So the rebounds are there. You know, you get a Draisaitl shot. You get maybe a rebound for Hyman, a couple rebounds. Hyman's got a good stick in front of the net for deflections. So those two Oilers are certainly in play for me. And on the other side, there's a lot of Kings, I think, that are in play. You can go to maybe Victor Arvidsson or Adrian Kempe, are both plus money as well. It seems like a single shot prop night, not so much parlays. George, I am leaning with Nikolaj Ehlers over over Pierre-Luc Dubois, but I think he's okay as well. As for Petrangelo, he is cleared in 5 straight games and 6 of his past 7 games, logging a lot of ice time. Vegas still without a lot of top forwards, so he's driving offense from the back end as well. One more segment, a couple more goal scorers here for you on Mean Streets. Don't go anywhere. Got about a minute here left to wrap up Mean Streets. The goal scorers have been okay lately, so I wanted to give you a couple more. The sides can be found over at ftnbets.com. So we're leading with some chalky plays here. This is over at FanDuel, Leon Draisaitl, plus 112. I think if you are parlaying them, it's fine. If you're taking it as a single and you can only get minus 110, maybe you look elsewhere. Kaylor Yamamoto checks boxes, but Leon Draisaitl's got goals in four straight. Seven of his past nine, he's got 10 goals over that span. He's on quite the heater, 48 on the season. Nikolai Ehlers as well, just shooting a puck, eight shots in his last game. As I mentioned, he's really been red hot over the past couple of weeks. He's got he's scored in seven of his past nine games, right? So it's another chalky play there for you. Those two guys, Timo Meier, plus 148. A matchup there against Arizona. Frank Vatrano, last night we hit him at plus 325. We've actually hit him two straight games. He's on that top line for the Rangers. He's a volume shooter, and he's got a knack for scoring. He finds the back of the net. He's got goals in three straight, four over that span, and he's got five goals in his last five games. He only played six games here with the Rangers. Dadonov is on a heck of a heater as well. This is the guy who was traded and then back over to Vegas, and it's a good thing they have him because he's got goals in four straight games and five of his past six. And then, that's it. Good luck. I'll say that. Good luck tonight and tomorrow. We got some more MLB talk and a lot of hockey talk as well. Have a good one. Cheers.